What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Psychovertical Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. I'm sorry, I apologise. There's been a bit of a gap in my podcasting. I guess my mind's been elsewhere at the moment. I've just realised. I had someone emailed me and they told me that I make a noise and I'm sucking my teeth or something, and I think it's this kind of this noise I got, but I'm not actually sucking my teeth. I'm just I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just making a noise. So I do apologize. Anybody out there who's got tinnitus, apparently it's like really bad if you got tinnitus. So I do apologize. This is probably the worst thing about doing a bloody podcast is you have to become so anal about everything. Like, you're trying, your brain is trying to think about what the hell you're going to say, because I've got nothing written down. I've just got to make it up as I go along. But also, you've got to try not to say like that. So now it's good. At least I know what it is. The person who told me this, He actually did send me some links to tell me exactly when I was doing it, so I could look it up and realise what I was doing. But I just couldn't be arsed, so I do apologise. So now I feel like I feel really tense now, because I don't feel like I'm really terrified that any moment now I'm gonna do it again. Oh God! God, if I haven't got enough on my plate now, I know I've got to be thinking about not doing that. So. And I'll do it air. I guess air's not too bad, is it? So, anyway, at least some things are the same. Like, I'm still here, still talking a load of old shy rambling on and stuff. So, at the moment, I'm going to avoid using any words to do with stuff that everyone else is talking about. I'm not going to talk about anything like that. you know, my wife has died, my mother-in-law's dead, I'm here in a house full of corpses, I'm eating the flesh off them, I've got a really bad problem with flies, but I don't want to talk about it. I don't want it all to be about me, so I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about other things, but I might actually do a special podcast, Maybe we need to come up with a different name for it, like, what's it, Cornelius. We'll call it the Cornelius Syndrome. my wife isn't dead, by the way. She would be upset if she knew I'd said she died. So you did it then. So I do apologize. Now I know I'm doing it. If you're out there, the person who told me, I should look up your name. I'm just being ignorant. But if you, now I know what it is, maybe I can stop myself. Maybe I can become like a really perfect person. Sometimes it's very hard to be good at something, but if you do it as like a joke or like a spoof, it's a lot easier. So like, hello, my name is Andy Kirkpatrick. Here I am talking like a real person on a real podcast. It's much easier to do it like that, or to sing a song like "I was climbing up a mountain." Or, you know, if you do it as a joke, it's a lot easier. Like I once did this Andy Parkin the musical. If anybody, I think it's online somewhere. It's on YouTube. I think it's called, is it When Hell Freezes Over or something? But I do this thing, Andy Parkin the musical, and the whole thing of it is that, like Andy Parkin, he was like really, really badly injured, and he couldn't, you know, people said he was going to die and everything like this. And he ended up, I think the joke was like, you know, when you've got nothing to live for and you're at the death's door, and, you know, what do? Like, you start painting. So doing watercolors. I don't know, this has got nothing to do with what I'm talking about now. I'm confused. My wife was just looking through the window then at me. I'm actually hidden away. I'm in Galway in Ireland. So I'm not really hidden away. I've just told her where I am. I'm in Galway in Ireland. So I'm as west as I can go. You're in that film 28 Days Later where they end up at the end of the film where they're in Scotland or somewhere. That's basically where I am now. I'm just like hidden away somewhere. But Vanessa's just found out that she can't go further than 2 kilometres from our house. So at the moment I'm just trying to sort of corral her. And it's really hard when you, like, I'm really good at doing nothing. You know, it's like a speciality of just doing nothing. Did it again then. And it probably means it's, generally when you climb with Norwegians, like when the first time I climbed with some Norwegians, like a normal person, like if it was me and you and we're talking and you're telling me something, you're telling me some story and I'm going, I can hear what you, I know what you're saying. Norwegians, when you're talking to a Norwegian, they go like, they do this thing like where they're breathing in, like they're asthmatic. And I found out that's basically they all do it. And it's just a way of like acknowledging that you're speaking to them. And I was once in a taxi actually in Dublin, and we're going along and I was talking to the taxi driver, and the taxi driver's like going, as I was talking, and I was like, yeah, excuse me, you've got no like Norwegian kind of, you know, you're not Norwegian or anything, are you? And he says, why? He said, because when I'm speaking, you go like, I said, no, I'm just asthmatic. So I think when I do that noise, I think it's a little bit like, I'm listening to myself, you know. So I'm like, yeah, like that. So again, I apologize for that noise. Maybe I could put like a, if I put a pencil in my mouth, it's harder to do it right in the noise, but then it's harder to talk as well. So this, oh God, it's annoying. Maybe this is why I was like writing all the time, because I just can't make, you know, I've got all these problems, all these like speech problems. So I'm doing it again now. Oh God. So I often when I'm doing these podcasts, like today has been like a complete waste of time. I was going to try and do like a stream, a live, which sounds like what you do when you like when you're having a piss. But I was going to do a stream, which a piss will be easier to do, but like a stream, like a live stream. I was trying to look up Twitter Telescope, and I was like looking all over the place to find all these astrology things, but it's not Twitter, it's something else. Anyway, oh God. But I was just spent all morning trying to do like working out how to do a live stream, because I wanted to do like a big rope soloing stream, because I have that's the thing most people ask me questions about, but it's very hard to to answer any of them on a podcast like this. So I was going to try and do like a video stream where I could show you images and PDFs and all that kind of stuff. But having spent about five or six hours doing it, I just despair. Like, it's one of these things where everything, like, technology is supposed to make things easier, but it's like, you know, install this and then you install that, and it's like, now log into this and then install that, and you and then restart your computer, and then, you know, you want your camera to somehow get better video, so you try and install it, and you have to update the driver, and then you have the wrong cable, and then you have to get another cable, and it's like, oh god, it just sucks the life out of you. Like, it'd be really good just to employ someone who's like, you know, I guess there's a lot of unemployed people soon, so at the moment, so just find someone who's can do good at that kind of thing, and just give them, you know, give them something, and get someone else to do it, because it's just beyond me. And maybe I'm getting really old, maybe, but I could just like hold the phone up, and, you know, do it like that in front of me, but it's just not as good. In fact, I'm not that bad in that recently. So Vanessa is like teaching remotely, so she's like teaching kids in Middle East remotely, so I had to so most people were just doing it on an iPad, and we have an iPad, but unfortunately someone came in our house and stole the iPad last week, so we don't have an iPad anymore. But so I was like, no, we should do it properly. So I got my camera and my DSLR, and I filmed it doing like a little introduction, then we made it look really good. You know, I've got nothing else to do, so we made it look really, really good. And then we uploaded it, and then the feedback was like, it's too good. Like, you're making all the other teachers look shit now. You know, so like, don't do it so good, because, you know, you make other people look bad. So that's probably one of the 58 laws of power. Oh no, it's 48 laws. That's one of the extra laws I've invented. Is like, don't make other people look shit in life. Like, just try and just get together, you know, have a monopoly of shitness. No, not Monopoly. Just rig it, basically. Is it Monopoly? Anyway, if you're all shit, then it's, and you all agree to, anyway. So, sorry, doing it again. Maybe I should slap myself in the face. Like, I talked at the BAM Film Festival in Canada, and you're not allowed to swear or anything. You can't say anything. Like, you can't say the word retard or anything. So that's not swearing. But whenever I did swear, I slapped myself in the face, which was, you know, it's very highly effective. So maybe every time I do that noise, what noise? It's not really, I'm not sucking my teeth. I'm just like sucking my up top of my mouth. Maybe that's not even what he's talking about. Maybe this is something else. Maybe I'm making another noise at the same time. Have you ever had that? Have you ever worried? Like, I had this thought that maybe I've got Down syndrome. Like, because I do. People often joke that I've got Down syndrome, and then I thought, like, maybe they're not joking. Maybe I have got Down syndrome. Like, there's nothing wrong with Down syndrome. But like, you know, like if you're not aware that you have, so like, learning difficulties. Although I am aware I have learning difficulties. So, you know, like a film, you know, when you have this film where you know, this guy is like chasing after androids, and at the end you realize he's an android, or he's, you know, I see dead people, all that kind of stuff. It's like so common in so much kind of media, the twist at the end where you realize that you were an android the whole time. Is what if you were like a crazy person? Like, do crazy people realize they're crazy? I doubt it, really. They probably just think everybody else is crazy, which they are, which is kind of, you know, you'd have to be crazy not to think that. So, yeah, so I am actually going to do it. So this is why I probably wasn't going to do a podcast, because my brain's a bit empty at the moment. Like, I'm still trying to get this bloody book finished, but I'm literally, I'm finding it increasingly more and more difficult to manage it for some reason. I think I'm getting to the end of my tether. And if I could just give someone else it to finish, because at the moment I'm saying it's just a layout. I just got to lay out the book, and it's all done. Like, if you follow my Instagram at psychovertical.com, no, at psychovertical, you'll see that I'm still posting up like diagrams from the book. And the reason is that I'm still finding diagrams I need to do for the book, and I'm still changing stuff. So I have all these things which are iron laws, like whenever you, like, you should always be connected to two things at all times when you're rappelling or various things. But then I'm like, I need to change that to like blood laws, because they're basically laws written in blood. Like if you don't do them, you could die, and other people have died not doing them. So then I'm like, oh, I need to go back. I need to like change all those, like where it says iron law and just really, really anal kind of stuff. But so that's a problem when you're doing it yourself, you're doing the book yourself, you have that ability. Like if a publisher was publishing it and I said, oh, by the way, I know you've proofread it and it's going to the printers, but can I just change this word to this word? Or, you know, like I've not used the word prussic in the whole book. I've used like friction hitch or whatever. And I'm like, so today I was like, you idiot, like, why don't you just use prussic? Because it would make everything so much more easier. It would make it more understandable for everybody. Why have you done this? And I'm like, oh yeah, I should really go back and change like the 5,000th times I've used the wrong word. So yeah, so at the moment, to be honest, I'm not at the end of my tether with it, but I sometimes feel like I've spent the entire day just doing like one image for the book, and it's really very, very frustrating. And this is probably that anybody out there, like, it's not like if I was a, you know, if I guess anybody who is like self-employed and it's only them working by themselves, it's probably one of the hardest things is to be like constantly, you know, self-motivating and things. So in the current situation, I am very lucky. In that I've always been basically on the edge of losing everything financially and having no income. So I'm very good at like being able to contract down to not spending any money and everything else. There was something the other day. Someone was talking about being poor, and this guy was like, said, yeah, literally, I've been down to my last £2,000, and I was like, you lucky bastard, you know, £2,000. So everyone's like whinging the whole time at the moment. So I'm not going to whinge. So, but on a brighter note, I'm in Ireland because I got deported. So that was kind of cool. Like I'd never been deported before. And it was everything you can imagine. It's like, it was actually a bit like Midnight Express. If you've never seen Midnight Express, I highly recommend it, because it was like a really famous film. It was made by Alan Parker, who did Angel Heart and Bugsy Malone and all this kind of fame. You know, what's that film in the island? The Irish are the black people of the world, or whatever. So he made loads of films. Anyway, Midnight Express. It's about this guy who gets put into a prison in Turkey, and it's kind of outrageous when you watch it now. It's like really, it's actually a really, really terrible film. I think it won loads of Oscars, and people thought it was amazing. But when you watch it now, it's absolutely terrible. It's like if you were Turkish, like now we. Anyway, it's really kind of terrible if you're Turkish. It makes Turkey look like everyone's trying to rape you and everyone's really sweaty. And it's not very good. But it was a little bit like that. I did feel like the guy at Midnight Express when they're like, the country is closed. You can't, you know, there is no visas. And he's like, where do I go? You must go. You must go where you came from. We're like, I can't go back there. I've not got a visa for there either. You must go. Just go. And it was... It was very funny, and there was people crying, people like losing their shit, and I think at the moment, although I don't want to address the world as it is at the moment, but my reading of it is that, do you know when you see these, when you're in the airport and someone's got a bag which is too heavy or something, and they come in and say, sorry, you have to pay like €50, $50 for this bag, or $200 for this bag. And people start like losing it and like, I can't, I've got the money and this is outrageous. And they're like, okay, we just have to go and stand over there. Like, you can't fly. And they kind of completely lose it. And everyone's like, Christ almighty, calm down. And then it's like the end of the world. And then like, slowly the person, you know, and like, I'm going to fucking fuck you up. I'm going to get someone to kill you and all that kind of stuff. They're going really crazy. And then slowly the carts start calming down and they're like, oh, well, it's not your fault. Sorry, mate. It's not your fault. And, you know, yeah, I do have all this stuff in my bag and, you know, all these like kettlebells and stuff. And maybe it is too heavy. And slowly everyone just like, everybody sort of calms down and they just kind of deal with it, whatever's going on. So I feel like it's a little bit like that at the moment. I did do I took a flight recently when I went from Saudi Arabia to Oman. And it was, if someone said, you know, we're going to put, you know, you have to go to the worst airport in the world. Like if you got this issue going on with lots of ill people, we're going to send you to the airport with all the poorest people you will ever see in your life, like who've never flown in their lives. And so we ended up in this airport and it was like hilarious because everyone had this like holy water. It's called like Jim water or Juju water or something. Some kind of like holy water that's been blessed or something. And everyone was trying to take all this shitloads of water in their hand luggage. Now, as you know, water is quite heavy. And I think it's one kilo for every kilogram. No, 1 kilogram, 1 kilogram for every litre. So they all had these like big bags which were just full of water, and they come up to the counter and the guy be like, do you have any water in this bag? And they're like, no water. And then he would try and lift the bag onto the scales, and it was so heavy, you know, it was like creaking. And he'd put it on, it'd just be like, you know, 75 kilos. This like, you know, 1 liter, you know, this little bag was like 75 kilos. There's water in here, like take the water out. So they start taking all this water out, and there's like water just piled up everywhere, all these bottles of water and water all over the floor and everything else. And someone told me like one reason why a lot of people are ill in Iran is people were getting this holy water, and then the imam was like spitting into it, and then they were drinking it. That was meant to make you feel better. So whether that's true or not, so we didn't have any water. Anyway, so yeah, so we're on this plane. It was a bit like that. It was like all these like poorly people all, you know, just coughing everywhere, and like it wasn't very good. And then I was really ill. Everybody who's been listening to this podcast, I was really ill in December, and so was Vanessa, so was like anyone I met got really ill with some sort of flu thing. So I kind of suspect that if I haven't had I haven't had this thing so far, it's probably because I've already had it. So you know, I've been flying around in airports and stuff. So, but anyway, when we were in Oman, we had another little adventure. On our last night in Oman, we camped on this like beach kind of area, and it was very very kind of remote. And we went off to look at some wadi somewhere, and then when we came back, we were like trying to find where we camped in the dark, and we were like driving along, couldn't see it. And then eventually we came to this bit and was like, this is actually where we were. Look, there's how we're firing. There's some rocks and stuff. And anyway, someone had like taken our tent. And they'd taken our tent, our sleeping bags, our carry mats, our Olvenest clothes. And she even had a wedding ring like in the tent. So we just like looked around like, where is it? Like, and even there was actually rocks inside the tent. So the tent didn't blow away. And even the rocks had disappeared out of the tent. So we ended up, we had to drive like 40 minutes to the police station. And we kind of went in this like quite a remote kind of police station. And everyone was, in these kind of countries, there's always like shitloads of policemen, but there's no crime. Maybe that's why. Maybe there's lots of policemen. Like someone said in England, if someone breaks into your house, you can never find a policeman. But at the moment, if you try and break out your house, there's, you know, they'll come. So yeah, so the police were there. All these policemen were there, and they all looked at us like, "What the hell do you want?" And we were like, can you help us, please? And like, no one spoke any English. We didn't speak any Arabic. So I started trying to draw like a picture of a tent and then doing like wind sounds, like it disappeared, like bing, like whatever. And then they were like, have you had an accident? And we're like, no, like tentios, you know. And Vanessa's like, decathlon, you know. She's like, she's not very good at like communicating. So anyway, eventually some guy turned up. And they were just like really, really surprised how anything could ever get any. There could be any crime in Oman, and it is a very, it's a super safe place. Like all these countries are like super safe. You're either going to get either something really bad's going to happen to you, or nothing at all, basically. So it's so anyway. So the tent was gone. They didn't know where it was. It wasn't going to come back. So we drove all the way back 40 minutes back to where we'd been. Just to double check when it got light, if it was still there somewhere. So we just like slept in the back of the car. I'd lost my coat as well. My coat was in the tent. So just like, and we, all we had was like the fly sheet from the tent. So we just kind of wrapped ourselves up in like the tent fly sheet. So it was very a very sad, pathetic night. But we did. Then we had to go to the airport. So we went to the airport. Vanessa wanted to go climbing, so we went climbing before then, and. And then we lost all our bags as well. That was another thing that happened. Is when you get deported, it's like, where are my bags? You know, because when you're deported from a country, your bags actually go through into the country. This is the thing you don't realize about being deported, is your bags actually go into the country, you know, because they've gone there, you know, you go through passport control and then pick up your bags. So technically, our bags had entered the country. But we weren't allowed to go into the country, and we're like, what about our bags? And like, don't worry, they are on the plane already. It's like, you don't know what plane we're getting on. And they're like, oh, don't worry about it. And it took us about 12 hours to get rid of us. And all the time they were like, where's our bags? And like, oh, don't worry, everything's fine. And there is a thing when there's a bit of a disaster where you just want to just like. Just fuck off, you know, mate. Just get on that plane. Just fuck off. I don't have to think about it anymore. So eventually, we ended up arriving in Heathrow, and the bags were there. So in the space of 24 hours or something, we'd literally like lost almost everything we owned. So, but never mind. It's only stuff. It doesn't really matter. So yeah, it's not been a good year this year. I think Vanessa made the mistake of saying. Nothing bad ever happens to us, but so far this year our house has burnt down, we've lost all our stuff, and we've been deported. So all the stuff we had is in a country we can't go back to. So never mind. At least we've got our health. That's all that for the time being. That's all we've got. That's all we've got left. So I've got like a sniffly nose. As soon as I start talking about the thing, I always start feeling really ill and like having a dry cough and. A runny nose, but I think I'm actually allergic to dust. So, not dust as in like dark materials, just as in dust. I shouldn't say that because I'm actually in my mother-in-law's parent-in-law's house. So it's a bit bad to start going on about how you're always sneezing because of dust and stuff. And they've got like cats. I haven't got cats. They've got these cats. They have all these weird names for cats here. Like, they've got this cat, it's called Maybe. I don't know why it's called Maybe. It's just like a cat that just comes in. They don't know who it belongs to. It just comes in the house. So, so is that all my news so far? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's my news. So, I should really, how long have I been talking for? I should really be talking about some kind of climbing-related thing, I guess. But I have had a lot of people asking about rope soloing, and I will probably have to try and do it, but I'll probably have to do it in a different way. I'll probably have to do it like on a video thing, and maybe do like a few videos kind of going through like rope soloing and some sort of ins and outs kind of things. And I'll try and do some more because I can't leave the house now, so I've got a bit more time. To do some other things. So maybe I'll do some more some other things. I've had like got quite a few questions. Most of them are quite easy, like you know, how many screw gits should you carry? So that's I would generally carry. I've got a big screw gate on my belay device. I always use like a really large HMS style, you know, carabine screw gate on my carabine. Or not a screw, like a lock, like a twist lock I use. Because it's good to have one that big. But also it's really handy if you're doing like a munter hitch and a monster munter. And I've used like the monster munter a lot for like passing knots. So if you want to lower someone down two ropes, say you're like 120 meters up and someone's broken their leg, you need to lower them all the way down to the ground. You just tie the two ropes together with an overhand, and then you just tie a munter hitch or a monster munter, which is like a munter hitch inside a munter hitch. And then you start lowering the person down. When the knot gets to the munter hitch, it'll just pass all the way through and then back out. So you can just lower someone down like 120 meters in one go. And I've even done it like down like seven ropes all tied together, like lowering something like maybe it was like 350 meters, 400 meters down the mountainside. So like if Joe Simpson, Simon Yates had that technique, he would have been all right. He would have got down. So I generally have like one screw gate. That's the large one on your device. And then I generally carry one other large screw gate, which is big enough for putting in like multiple clove hitches and everything else. So I'd have one spare screw gate, one large spare screw gate, and then the screw gate on my belay device. And then usually we have two short quick draws, and both of them have like very small, like small screw gates on them on one side, like a lock draw. So if you're climbing on like very so if you're climbing on grit and there's only like one wire or one cam or something, and you don't want any chance of the rope unclipping itself, then we'd use like one of those draws on it with the screw gate on it. And also we mainly started carrying it when we're climbing in Tuolumne in Yosemite, where you maybe got like a whole pitch and you only have like two or three bolts on it. So we generally use like a lock draw on those kind of bolts, which is like it sounds a bit overly cautious, but I've often found that, you know, if you're in a position where you're climbing and the gear or the bolt, whatever, is right next to your waist as you're doing this hard move, it is actually quite easy for the rope to like come out in that situation. Less so when you're falling and you're falling a long way onto a piece of gear, like, you know, when you're sport climbing or whatever. But when your waist is very close to the gear and you're moving around, going up and down, I find that's kind of a sort of a danger point, really. So sometimes if I'm like sport climbing and I'm in that sort of situation and I don't have a lock draw, like some people use a lock draw on the first bolt, even at climbing walls, because that's, you know. So sometimes I'll just put like two draws like back to back, so you're 100% sure that that rope can't escape as you're doing this thing. So, but maybe I'm just getting old. So, but if you've got those two little small screw gates, then that just gives you some extra leeway if you did need to use screw gate for something else. And then you can always use like doubled up carabiners, like back to back carabiners, if you want, you know, something that even safer than a screw gate. And I had a question about sleeping mats. Like sleeping mats, I guess when I first started climbing, everyone just had like carry mats, which are just blown foam. I think you get like chemical foam and blown foam. I can't remember now, but yeah, you basically get two different types of foam. Like one's cheap and poor quality, and it gets thin really, really quickly. Like that's probably what most like sit mats are made out of, and cheap the foam in, like, you know, in shoulder straps of cheap rucksacks and things. Cheap bouldering mats, where the foam looks really, really good to begin with, but it rapidly kind of compresses and loses its life. And then you get like more high quality foam. So the mats made by like Multimat, I'd say most of them are all going to be like high quality foam. So the classic sort of carry mat was the mat that most people had then, and they were I think you had like two different weights, and there was like an expedition weight, like mountaineering weight, and then there was like a lightweight one, which was just for like UK camping, and everyone seemed to get along with those pretty well. You know, people use them in the Himalayas and, you know, camping and everything else. And my granddad, he told me that before you had sleeping mats, because you used to sleep on your side, and you would like dig a hole for your hip, so your hip didn't press into the ground, which is quite a good tip. I don't know if anybody's ever, it's actually quite, you know, you do lose a lot of heat, you know, if you're like laying on the ground. And is it not something that you're better having like a layer underneath you than a layer on top of you? Or there's some idea that you're warmer if you lay on something rather than just have nothing. But I'm not entirely sure that's true. And I've had quite a few nights where I had to bivvy out, where I've not had anything underneath me. And like the classic way to do that, if you don't have anything underneath you, is to sleep on your rope. It's quite interesting to look at how much stuff you have to actually sleep on, you know, how much sort of insulation. And, you know, the main piece of insulation you have is the back of your rucksack, if you have some foam in there. And it's always worth having some foam. And the foam, some of these backpacks where you have a piece of foam which is like folded in half, that's even better, because ideally you want something that's going to cover your from your hip up to your shoulder if you lay on your side. So it doesn't have to be luxury like the whole length of it, really. And then your rope. And if you're sleeping out on your rope, like a rope is, it's not super comfortable, but it is actually actually insulating. It will like keep the you off the floor a little bit. And the best way to do it is, you'll sometimes see people where they'll just like snake the ropes backs and forwards across the floor and then lay on top of them. But if you actually make them into like what's it called, is it not a butterfly coil, where you like tie figure eight and start feeding the rope through itself, and you create is it a butterfly coil, a snake chain coil, like a daisy chain. You just make this like chain of rope, and it's actually a little bit more comfortable, and it's a little more insulating, but it doesn't cover such a big area. But if you make a 160 meter rope into, if you daisy chain it all together, it actually makes quite a good, decent place to sleep on it. And then usually you're going to sleep next to your climbing partner, so you can kind of spoon together, which is like spooning together is like really very highly effective. And if you're not like on the side of a mountain and you're just anywhere, like sometimes you end up in a position, you know, like you're descending in the dark or whatever, and you're so knackered that you just have to sleep where you are and just, you know, carry on in the morning or whatever, have a kip. So, you know, the whole like survival thing of, you know, piles of leaves and, you know, all that kind of stuff is really effective. If you've got a bothy bag, you know, if you just like shove loads of leaves in it and then pull it over you, so you've got this kind of all this dead air space with the leaves, and then you've got like a cover which will stop the air moving around, it can actually be quite warm. And I did once do that where I was like camping, I think I was camping in Wales, and I had like a really crap sleeping bag, and I ended up getting loads of leaves and put them in my bivy bag, and in between the bivy bag and my sleeping bag, and it was like a lot warmer. So I guess all the thermarests like came out you know, I think I was, maybe I was like 16, 17, 18 when I think my dad got a Thermarest. And I think as you're getting older, your body gets stiffer and you're less, it is like harder sleeping on really hard things as you get older. I think you do get a little bit softer. So a Thermarest came out, and of course, like where they are, you know, they're a lot warmer, a Thermarest, but as you can imagine, they have all sorts of drawbacks. And I must have had like 5 or 6 Thermarests in my life, and you know, various things happened to them, like some delaminated, so you suddenly had this like big like football sized like bit of them, and so you couldn't really sleep on them, and some sort of delaminated on the inside, so they just, you know, they look completely fine, but they just, the air was coming out in like, you know, in tiny like microscopic holes where the air was coming out. And so you generally, if I've ever used a Thermarest in a situation where it was like, if it was like, you know, critical, it was like, sorry, Vanessa's been for a run. She's like broken a quarantine, so she's walking around outside, distracting me. So, God, just go away. I'm on the do the podcast. God, women. So, yeah. So, if you ever done anything like it was like really critical, you generally would carry like a normal mat, like a foam mat, and you'd also carry a Thermarest, and that's kind of well tried kind of system. I think if it was like super critical though, you might be better just carrying two foam mats. It's really important to always carry a repair kit, which is one of those things that you say that, but generally when you get a puncture, you haven't got a repair kit. It's like, oh, always carry a repair, but I haven't got one. So a good trick is generally you're more likely to have some gaffer tape somewhere. Like you should always have some kind of first aid, but first aid of you and your gear in a bag, you know, like a little tiny bag, you know, have some gaffer tape in it. Basically, that's it. Just have some, you know, some needle and thread, a few little bits in there, some, you know, safety pins and, you know, whatever, a roll of like tape, like athletic tape. And you can mend a Thermarest quite effectively with just some gaffer tape. But what you have to do, you need to heat it up over a stove, so it becomes very, almost like it's almost melted, and then stick the gaffer tape onto the Thermarest, and then ideally do like a few layers of that, but getting gradually bigger and bigger and bigger. So that can create quite an effective repair, but you have to heat it up first. If you just put it on as it is, it's probably not very effective. Having some, carrying some super glue or some kind of glue that can sometimes help, but in your kind of general first aid kit, sort of, you should always put in some, ideally you want one of those little things of seam sealer, seam grip, like the really tiny ones, like really, that's a really handy thing to, you know, to always have in your first aid kit. And with that, you can repair it with almost anything. Like you can cut you can cut like a piece of fabric off something, and, you know, you get some, you know, like you know, food container or whatever, just to try and repair the hole. One thing which is very important if you're doing sort of cold expeditions where it's like really, really cold over a long, long period, is you should never blow up your Thermarest or any kind of mat. You should always, like, it's always a pain in the ass, like having one of those bags where you're having to like inflate it from a separate bag. But what you find is if you're constantly breathing air into a mat every night, is what happens is like the moisture like builds up inside the mat and then it freezes, so the mat ends up can stick together, which I don't know if it can damage it, but I kind of get the impression it probably isn't very good for it either. But the worst thing is the mat just gets like much, much heavier and it won't pack up as small because it's full of ice. So when you roll it out, it's actually quite hard to blow it up sometimes, and you get ice in the nozzle and everything else. So you should always try and use a separate sort of like bag that a lot of these mats have these days for blowing the mat up. And if you're on a trip that takes, say you're like skiing across, Iceland or Greenland or Antarctica, or doing a big trip like that, like a trip where you're using a pulk or something, is what you want. You actually want a bag where you can actually put the mat in without deflating it. I don't know what the name of it is, but it's like Norwegians kind of invented the idea, I think, where you just have this big, a bit like a bag where you put your suit in, but it's a size for your mats. So you have this big bag, it zips around like three corners, and inside it you'd have your two mats, and then you have your sleeping bag. And at the end, in the morning, you just get out your sleeping bag, zip the whole thing up, and then just like put it on top of the pulk, and then ski with it. And the end of the day, you just open it, get into it, and that's it. So the sleeping bag isn't compressed as well. So when you compress the sleeping bag, the same thing can kind of happen a little bit, in that the moisture from the night, if you're not using a vapor barrier bag, it's condensing in the sleeping bag, throughout the day. So there is some element that you actually do sort of dry the bag just by leaving it out, and the sun's shining on this thing in the daytime. It seems to, keep it like lofted up. Like if you're continually compressing a sleeping bag in like really, really cold conditions, you generally find towards the end, when you pull the bag out of the stuff sack, it's just the same size. It's just like, it's completely squashed. It's just all stuck together with ice and things. So it's not very nice. If you have a synthetic bag, then it will warm up, and the moisture will melt, but it doesn't really go anywhere. So you can end up with, like when we climbed the Troll Wall in the winter, I had like an Ayungalak bag tie-in, which is a really good sleeping bag. And, towards the end, like there was like ice, like as thick as big as your fist, like in the sleeping bag. So it's not good. So then the Thermarest has been like developing all these different types, and then you had Exped came out with the down mats, and the Exped mats are really good. Again, they have a slight, for expedition stuff, because you're not supposed to blow into them. Like, don't blow into them. I know some people do, but I wouldn't blow into them. Well, don't blow into them, because it will like wreck them eventually. So they're good. They're lighter than they look, and they're very warm, and they're very comfortable. And if you kind of match them up with a normal mat, then they're really good. A good thing they don't make it anymore. You'd have to make one yourself. Was Exped? They made like a cover that went over the mat, and it was like, I think it was like three mil foam on either side of it, with the down mat on the inside. So it's kind of like it just kind of slipped in between the two. And what it meant was it protected the mat, because you had this foam on both sides. And if the mat was to deflate, you still had 6 millimeters of foam, you'd have the down as well, even though it was deflated. And I always thought that was like quite a cool idea, but it would only be useful if you're doing like a proper kind of expedition. We'd have to like take it up, put it down the whole time. But the thing, a real kind of, I'm trying to look here now on the Thermarest. Sleeping pads, fast and light. The mat I've been using the most recently is it the Nano Air? Yeah, the Nano Air X Light. And when I got it, I was like, Christ, it's like so light, so very, very compact kind of a mat. But I've been really surprised how well it's lasted. And I think I must have had it now maybe 4 years. And it's been up El Cap, like four or five times. It's probably had at least, I would say, about a year and a half of nights like in it, like, you know, long, you know, 4 months every night in Africa, you know, 3 months in Australia, like every single night on this mat. And it did have holes in it. Like, you know, whenever you're camping, you always have to be really, really wary of thorns and things, because they can just go through the bottom of your tent into the thing. So if you're doing a lot of camping, you should always use like a foam underlay, like a piece of 3 mil foam, or something, you know, something to protect the bottom of your tent and also protect the bottom of your mat. But they were really good until they just got stolen, you know, from in Oman. So I was really, really surprised. Like, they're not cheap, but they're really, really good. Like, one thing it's really, really worth making is like a pairing kit, but like a pairing strap which holds the two mats together. And you can make what you can make one. You can just make one out of a piece of cord, but if like 2 mil cord. So you just get, you know, a loop, and then you tie a knot in the middle of it, so it's kind of holds them both together and they don't like shift around. Or you can make one out of very thin sort of like nylon ribbon and the smallest buckles you can find. They're just good, because the more, you know, if you're the more you're sleeping together, the warmer you're going to be. That's why, like, if you like a two person sleeping bag is always like way warmer. Like, I would say a two person sleeping bag is, you know, like a third warmer, because you got another person in the sleeping bag, if not more than just sleeping by yourself. So if you're into like adventure, you know, lightweight stuff, there's a few really good two person sleeping bags. So you can make one yourself for two people, and really good. But you have to be, you know, you have to be good friends. Then another mat would be ridge rest, that's what it's called. So then you have like the ridge rest mats, which are kind of, I've had a lot of ridge rest mats. I think the current ones are probably, they have this kind of, I think a lot of them have a shape. The Z lights, which are like an egg box kind of thing. And then the ridge rests are kind of more robust. And you actually have like two weights. I'm just looking now, see if they still make, do they still make them? Maybe they're not making them now. No, they still do make them. So you get you've got the Ridge Rest Classic, which and the Ridge Rest Soul Light, which is like a lighter version. And they used to do like the classic, and then you do like a winter one, which was thicker. And they are more comfortable than a just standard mat. But the only problem is, if you're camping and there's a lot of snow, if you get any snow on them, it kind of gets trapped in the ridges. pardon me, or just a sneeze, which is a bit of a pain, because if you get any snow like inside your, you know, on a ridge rest, it's probably going to melt into your sleeping bag. So that is a pain. And if you're sleeping directly onto snow, then you lose that warmth underneath, because the mat actually compresses, you know, melts down into the ice. So all those little air gaps underneath you fill up with ice. So you're only getting like two thirds of the insulation value if you're sleeping directly on ice. But for general camping and everything else, they are good. I actually make, when I'm using like an ordinary sleeping mat, like a non-inflatable one, I also generally make up out of some nylon, like a bag for it to go in. So, do you know, usually a mat, you kind of roll it up and you like put it on the side of your rucksack. And sometimes people have a bit of bungee loop or something to hold it down. I usually make up just like a stuff sack that's exactly the right size for it to go inside there. And the reason for that is just that it stops the mat getting really, really wet if it's on the outside of your sleeping bag, outside of your rucksack, if you're in really kind of wet, you know, if you're like walking or whatever, or it's like snowy, and it just keeps it in there. It doesn't really weigh very much, and the bag that you have once you've emptied the sleeping mat out of it, it's always handy to have bags, stuff sacks and stuff when you're camping or when you're in a snow hole or whatever to put things in. So at the moment I probably have quite a lot of different mats, but it's just having the right mat for the right situation, really. But probably my kind of do it all mat is gonna be the Therm-a-Rest one at the moment. Like I maybe Exped do a similar kind of one, but I've not used. There are other people making mats, but generally I tend to stick with either Therm-a-Rest or Exped. They do seem to make the best mats. And if it's just a foam mat, then Multimat in the UK, they seem to make really, really good mats. I think they've probably been making all these mats since forever. And I think actually Bergens in Norway, they make a really good mat that's super thick. It's like a Norwegian Army issue one maybe that Bergens make, but they make one that's really, really, really thick. Like, I don't know how thick it is, like 10 mil, 12 mil or something, but that's quite a good one. Had one of those, but it just seemed to blow away one day. Yeah, so mats blow away. That's one thing you have to be wary of. So any mat you have, you need to have like some way of securing it to other things. So on my Therm-a-Rest, I'd always gaffer tape on some kind of clipping loop somewhere. So if you're on a portal edge or on a ledge, whatever, you know, you don't want your mat to blow away. And it is like super, super easy for it to happen. So I think I've been talking for too long. So I do apologize for not doing a podcast for a while, but I will endeavor to do one more often, as in I'll try and do another one this week, because everyone's sat on their asses doing nothing. So if you have any questions, anything at all, anything you want me to talk about, anything, blah, 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 apart from to do with my speech impediments and noises I make, I think maybe as I get more into it, once I start talking, maybe those noises go away, maybe. Maybe when I'm just on one train of thought, that noise goes away. So here's, you know, fingers crossed, eventually I'll end up being the perfect human being who can speak and everything, or more perfect human being. So yes, thank you for listening, and be safe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.